Bienvenidos and welcome, everyone. Welcome to Lauren's Podcast. I'm Lauren Hutton, and you already knew that. Oh boy, I hope you're having a wonderful week, because I am. I say that every time, even when stuff's bad, you know? Just because, you know, I don't know. I'm just a positive person. That's all there is to it. I hope you're just, if you have half the amount of positivity that I have, then, oh boy, howdy. You probably annoy your friends too. I'm here with a whole live person again. That's right. We got Logan Lochran. Did I say that right?
Well, the first name is Connor.
God damn it! I call you Connor every single time. Or Logan, and I'm mixing it up again.
I'm over it.
Why do I call you Logan? Why do you have a face?
This is the first time I've seen it happen.
Well, that's good, because the last time I saw you at Urban Artifact, I was like, hey, what's up, Logan? And you didn't bat an eye.
Cool. He must be talking to some really cool guy named Logan. The guy seems cool.
Oh, boy. Hey, man, thanks for coming out. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. It's a blast already.
Yeah, dog. I don't necessarily like just a few housekeeping things. If you happen to say anything obscene or heinous, there's no censorship here. I just ask that if you do say something obscene and heinous, that you apologize to my mom afterwards.
Fair enough.
Sound like a plan?
I'll say yes.
Yeah, dog.
I just came from the Racial Epithets podcast, and I'll be sure to keep that under wraps.
What in the hell is that?
That doesn't exist.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. We're running bits already. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, so, Connor, how you doing, bud?
Tremendous, man. Water and coffee here. The setup is lovely. I'm having a merry old time. Slow start to the day. I mean, work was iffy. Whatever. Everything's fine. I'm pretty well, man. I'm having a good day. This is cool.
Good
and,
deal.
Nermal the cat has come to chill with us, and he's therapeutic, to say the least.
Oh, man. He really is like a service animal. He just doesn't have his papers. Everyone that comes in contact with him that's not allergic to cats is just like, wow, my day's better. I wonder why. It's because of the tuxedoed motherfucker himself. Sorry, Mom.
Amen. All right. Sorry to Lauren's mom. I feel party to that swear. I wasn't, you know, whatever.
Connor, have you ever been on a podcast before?
Honestly, I've been on a couple. They were live. They were really weird format. It was at a bar in Forest Park where they normally host slam poetry. And I would go up and do poems every now and again and just kind of be funny. And everybody thought I was goofy, so it was a fun time. But every now and again, they'd have a podcast and they did like the Dude Talk Hour. And they invited me because they thought I was a dude. And
Are you not?
Not in their sense of the term. It was a weird time. So I've been on that podcast. This is already a step up. They had no coffee for me.
Oh.
And they were really excited to call me fat.
What? You're not even a big boy.
I know. It's crazy. It was wild.
Why? Wait, I don't understand. Okay. First of all, that podcast sounds incredibly problematic.
It was a blast. I thought it was pretty cool.
Fair enough. All right. Well, let's get into some of your history, bro. Like, how long have you been telling jokes on purpose?
On purpose, in front of people, was 2 years this October. So about two and a quarter years.
Have you been in Cincinnati that whole time?
Yeah. I went to New York City one time. I was there for work anyway, for my real job. And while I was there, I did 9 open mics, and I died on the first one and had great sets after that. But the first one, I died in front of one of my heroes, Big Jay Oakerson. Yeah, it was awesome. It hurt so bad.
What are the open mics like in New York? Like, what's the difference between, like, a Cincinnati open mic and a New York open mic?
It's weird, and I almost prefer this scene, and maybe it's because I'm just familiar with it.
Yeah.
But New York open mics, they had a website like ours. Theirs was helpful like ours,
yeah.
But it's literally 35 mics a night.
Holy crap.
So that's awesome and terrible.
Yeah.
Because like you, the variety and availability is great. You can get sets all the time, but every now and again, but obviously not all 35 are good mics. Some of them are absolute horrible rooms.
Of course.
But I was lucky enough to get up at UCB Theater, and I got my name pulled at the Comedy Cellar for their mic, and that was awesome.
That was really cool.
Yeah. But otherwise, except for that, which was just a weekend, it's been Cincinnati the whole time, and I've been loving it. I'm actually like really proud of our scene now that I've moved around a little bit.
Yeah.
I went to Columbus for a little gig and to try to do Kill Tony, and I don't know how many Columbus comics listen to this, Mike, but
just throw shade, baby. Throw shade.
Not naming names, but just like hacky stuff, like just like rehashed memes and delivered poorly. Like,
it was, oh man, if you're gonna steal a meme, at the very least, deliver it correctly. Am I right?
Perform it, goddammit.
Right.
Like, sorry, Lauren's mom.
Joke never gets old to me.
All right.
Oh man,
I'm already a fan of it. But yeah, and then seeing. There's gems, of course. Some cool people from Louisville have come up and performed at our mics, you know, our area.
Oh, absolutely.
And I've liked their stuff. But, like, it's and, you know, you wouldn't call it, like, the same level as, like, a Chicago or Toronto kind of scene. But Cincinnati's, like, it's good comedians. Like, we're putting out good stuff.
We also have, like, like, no one ever thinks about Cincinnati in the framework of, like, oh, yeah, that's a great stand-up town. But we are. Like, we have one of the most developed stand-up scenes around. I would even put us in the top five up there with Chicago and Austin, Texas, and San Fran, L.A., and New York. Like, I would put us at a solid last place in the top five.
Hey, I'll take that proudly. I might agree. Like, it is good. And the more that I pay attention to what, bigger name comics are saying, a lot of them are really Indigo Bananas. Like, it's a popular club.
Yeah.
And even the Funny Bone and Liberty gets some praise from the likes of Bert Kreischer.
I mean, yeah, they still book stuff like, you know, mentalists and hypnotists and stuff like that.
I was a bouncer there for a year. That was
no kidding.
That was my start in comedy. Like, luckily, I got to see people there that were so terrible. It was like, I could do that.
It's always nice to see someone do it poorly and be like, I could do better.
Or I could be that bad.
Yeah, exactly.
I could be just that bad.
Okay, so you mentioned Big Jay Oakerson is one of your idols. Who are some other people that you would say influenced your writing?
I adore Rory Scovel, but that's more of a performance thing. Like, it's like jazz up there for him. I wish I could do that kind of thing. As far as writing, the guy that, like, I listened to and it almost helped me figure out how to write jokes was Mark Normand.
Okay.
Like, his delivery and just the way he sets up a premise and then would like throw on kind of tags constantly, I related to, because I'm terrified of silence. I can't do the storytelling, and I'm like so impressed by those guys, because as soon as I like they're not responding to something, I'm like, oh, everybody hates me, bail.
I just
have to go to jokes or I feel awful up there. But Mark Normand is more that style.
What's your favorite joke of yours? Like, what's your favorite joke that you've written?
Well, I did one, actually. I just wrote this the other day. It's gone well, so I'm pretty proud of it. I'll sell this one. It's my friend, he's in the military, and he's getting deployed pretty soon to a country where porn is illegal. And when he told me that, all I could think is, man, if I lived there, I would be so good at drawing.
I like that, dude. That's fun.
Thank you.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it almost seems worth it. to go there just to get that skill.
Yeah, dog. Yeah.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
I'm so happy that went well.
Oh, right. Man. In the audience of one. In
There's
the
only
of
one
room.
Person in this room, dude. It was just going to be a you like it or you don't. And oh, God. That could have been horrible. That could have been amazing if that would have gone badly, actually.
Dude, I'm an easy laugh. It's one of the things that, like, I laugh at just about anything.
So do I. I laugh at. Sometimes I feel like I'm being a devious prick with my laugh because, like, I'll laugh if someone's dying a little bit up there. Like,
but that's fun. Like, especially, it's almost like...
But it's because we can relate.
Exactly. You feel their pain, and then their pain becomes hilarious to you. I love watching comics bomb. It's one of my favorite things in the whole world. I will die laughing in the back of the room just watching a dude eat it. It's the best.
I agree, yeah. For sure, especially if we know the guy and we know he or she can actually be good.
Yeah,
like we've seen them have good sets. Then yeah, I can laugh at this. If it's somebody new though, like then it just feels evil if I'm laughing at like this new guy trying to figure it out and he's doing terribly.
See, okay, it's funny. I like that you brought that up. You know, the delineation between whether or not you know the comic and whether or not you know that person is funny. Because once you know that person is funny, that's when it becomes hilarious.
Yes,
but if
it's
a new person that you haven't seen before, I don't know why, but watching them bomb makes me angry. It's not right. This isn't a good response
to have. I actually agree. it makes me angry too if we can tell that like this guy's not really gonna do it.
Yeah.
Like he's just fucking around and he's taking up space where actual people are trying to work on their actual material.
Exactly.
That's infuriating.
It's the concept of you're in the way.
Yeah.
Why are you trying? Because you're in the way.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've been surprised before. I've had people that I've seen for the first time and thought, oh, well, they're going to be gone in 6 months because this is going to crush their soul. And then here they are 2 years later, still telling a stupid finger guns bit. Shout out to Daniel Waterhouse. I hated you when I first saw you. Jesus Christ. You were so bad in my eyes. And then you just kept telling the same jokes. And for some reason, they started working. Kudos to you, buddy.
Shout out Daniel Waterhouse. Sorry, Lauren's mom.
Yeah, we're on it. We're doing it.
All right. I thought we'd get a swear. Let's make Daniel Waterhouse an official swear. He's a good guy.
I mean, I feel like you could replace a lot of words with just Waterhouse.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like...
Went home and Waterhoused my wife last night.
Oh, God! That's not where I was going, but Jesus Christ, that's funny.
And the cops have been called.
I Waterhoused your mom!
That's like when they take waterboarding too far, it becomes waterhousing.
That's going to become a hashtag on Pornhub. I see it. I see it in the future. 100%. Oh, man.
We get it. Yeah.
Stepdad waterhouses daughter.
I just became a Pornhub warrior. I'm going to hop on these comments and throw waterhouse everywhere I can. Until it's a thing.
I love it, dude. We got to make it. We got to get that shit trending on Twinder.
Twinder.
God, I don't know how words work. Sorry, Mom. Are you close with your mother?
Yeah, pretty close. They're, my parents are extremely religious, and I'm way not.
Are you Jewish?
No. God, that would be so funny. I'm a Christian. My dad's really Catholic and my mom's really Protestant, and I kind of got both growing up, and it was a lot.
That, yeah, dude, you get all the liturgy and none of the guilt, right?
It's all the guilt and some liturgy.
Oh, okay, all right, all right. I can see that mix.
Shitload of guilt.
Sorry, Mom.
Sorry.
It's fine. I'll cover them when
you'll
forget,
cover
baby.
I got you, man. I appreciate you.
What was growing up like? Like, cause I mean, half Catholic, half Protestant, there had to be some bumping of the heads a little bit.
Plenty. It was pretty cool. I remember when I got caught smoking weed, all these people that I'd never talked to, we went to one of these mega churches.
Oh,
all these
people
I'd never met at the church, cause there was thousands of people, were like coming up to me. Hey, I heard about what happened. I want to talk to you and minister to you. I was like, Jesus,
your
lady.
Name was going around the prayer circle.
Dude,
I just wanted you
does.
To know.
It's crazy that Lochran kid smokes pot, goes around the prayer circle so fast. It was the shit.
Oh man, that's hilarious. Wait, which mega church was it?
Center Point Christian Church. It's in Lakota. It's a Yeah, it's I guess borderline mega. It's not fully. It's not Joel Osteen, but it's a big old boy with a lot of members.
Like throw a number on it. How many were there for Sunday morning?
Sunday morning usually 1,000 to 1,500.
Oh, that's pretty mega churchy.
Yeah,
I mean that's a big old church, bro. I was raised in tiny little Baptist churches that had like congregations of 100. So for you to be talking about like, I mean, you're basically talking about a commune at that point. 1,500 people?
Too.
Holy crap.
It's real hive mind stuff. They are great at getting people to vote for Trump. All right.
Oh, man. I'm so glad that you brought that up because today, I saw a video that my mom posted on Facebook. And the title of the video, you know, they got like, you know, texts over the video that let you know what it's talking about. It just said, Trump Prophecy 2020. And it was these people, I mean, they looked so professional. It was a talk show of some kind that was based toward conservative Christians, and they had a quote-unquote prophet on there. And the host was talking about, like, now you're very good about cataloging your prophecies, making sure they're post-dated for whenever they're going to happen and such. And just tell us about some of the things that you've been hearing the Lord tell you recently. And he goes off on this long tangent about, like, I mean, he was talking about all kinds of random shit. Sorry, Mom. But one of the things he was talking about is like, now snow is a very big ideological pinpoint in God's prophecies. It's used for purification and cleansing of evil. And apparently, in 2018, all 50 states in the United States of America got snow at the same time including like Florida, Hawaii, obviously, Alaska, but like all of them, blanket of snow. And he was saying, now this is clearly pointing to bringing out the evils in our political structure. It's very specific to political structures, this weird snow phenomenon. And I kept waiting for him to be like, okay, is he going to be talking about how we have like a racist pussy-grabbing president that's finally going to be brought to justice? No! It's the Democrats' fault! Of course! And I just sat there and I'm like, wow, my mom posted that. Oh, boy.
My mom probably liked it. Don't feel bad.
I feel like your mom and my mom could sit down and have some tea.
They could have the fuck out of some tea. Sorry, moms.
I love the double. That was great. Yeah. Sorry, moms. So, like, tell me more about your childhood. You were raised in this mega church. How old were you when you got caught smoking pot?
And then 16. Yeah, 16 by my parents, 17 by the authorities.
Now, obviously, this wasn't your first time smoking. It was just your first time getting caught, right?
Indeed. Yeah, but I started at 16. I was really afraid of everything until I was about 16.
It's funny how that happens.
And then I tell people that, and they're like, that's way young. What are you doing? Like, responsible people.
Right.
That began smoking pot after 25 the way you're supposed to. And
yeah,
everything.
When your brain's done developing.
Right. You've read the stuff, too.
Oh, okay. Of course, baby. Yeah. I came from a very similar background. I was terrified of everything until I was like 14, 15 years old. And then, you know, the puberty chemicals really started to make me think on my own.
Mm.
And then, you know, you learn about critical analysis in high school, and you're like, well, why haven't I looked at my own religious ideologies with any sort of critical analysis?
Yeah.
And then I didn't. I just swept it under the rug, and I was like, well, I don't have to believe this. I'll just keep going to church because that's where they let me play music.
Right towards the... Yes, man. I played... See, I had to bail on that, though. I played guitar in the church band, and I got kicked out a couple times because I got too bluesy. I would like...
Too bluesy?
Yeah, man. I would... I'd be like feeling it a little bit. I'd play a lead a little bit, and they'd be like, "That seems like you're glorifying yourself there, Connor." And like,
oh my god!
I'd open the goddamn
flashbacks.
Book. I'd be like, "Right there, it says make a joyful noise. Make
yeah,
a
baby.
Joy. I'm doing it. All right." And so that was like, this is like, that's me thinking on my own, starting to smoke pot, 16-year-old Connor. But I was still a little bit of a believer then. One day I was in study hall, and I would always listen to comedy on my Pandora account. And George Carlin's There Is No God bit came up.
Oh, that'll make you lose your faith.
I dropped it. I was high as fuck, second period, reading a Guinness Book of World Records, and that started coming on. And I was like, you know what? I think that guy jumped that far on his own. He did that record. It wasn't God.
Right.
I don't care who he gave credit to.
Oh, man. I remember the exact moment I lost my faith, dude. I didn't bow out as soon as you did. I had a bunch of people telling me that I had to go to Bible college because I was going to do great things for the Lord.
Yeah, I was supposed to go on missions and do Bible, all of that. Yeah.
Oh, baby. Like, okay, so like the timeline was like, you know, 14, 15, I started playing music in the youth group, and then we developed a praise team that was specific to the youth group. And then that basically took over the whole youth group because everyone wanted to be involved. Everyone wanted to be a singer.
Isn't it strange how clicky that stuff gets?
Oh, it's so
in that environment,
weird.
It is weird.
Well, that's just how human beings operate, dude.
That's true.
They cling to each other, and then everyone that's not within the circle is shunned.
Yeah, but like that, you're not supposed to do that. It's in the book. Oh, God, the hypocrisy bugs me. I even like some of the stuff in the Bible.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And yet the people that try and like... do the Bible-y things. They just like pick and choose the things that make them feel good about their decisions.
Most of them haven't read it, too.
Amen, brother. Amen.
That bugged the hell out of me.
I went to Bible college because, like I said, everyone said, you're going to do great things for God. And so I went there and I studied music for like a year and a half. I shouldn't say studied. I listened. I didn't do a lick of outside work. It was literally like I showed up to class just enough to not get kicked out of those classes. You know what I mean?
Hey, man, say studied. I was studying music high off my ass all day yesterday. if that's how that goes. Say studied. I like it.
There we go. But yeah, dude, I was it took me literally right before I left for Bible college. I smoked weed for the first time. And then I kind of, you know, that'll crack an egg open in your brain.
Have you seen the show Crashing with Pete Holmes?
I've seen a few episodes.
That is like,
very similar.
That is pretty similar to the synopsis. Yeah, keep going. Sorry.
So like, I smoked a couple of times, and then I got to Bible college, and I don't know how this happened, but I just found the stoners at Bible college. There were four of us, and we were a whole tight clique. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like one of us would, it was so communal because none of us had enough money to buy weed regularly, but we had enough money to buy weed about once a month, and between the four of us, we smoked every week. It was great.
There you go.
And so, like, there was an alley outside of the school where all the seminary heads, as I like to call them, would go, and they would smoke tobacco pipes and pretend they were C.S. Lewis. It was the most fucked up thing I've ever heard of.
That part of it actually sounds pretty fun to me.
It was nice.
I would do that. I would hang out and smoke pipes. And yeah, like.
People started to get a little weird, though, because my pipe smelled funny. Uh-huh. And then, you know, one thing led to another, and I eventually outgrew the stoners at Bible college because they started to feel guilty about smoking weed at college.
That's weird.
Oh, man. I'll never forget. I went to talk to my buddy Drew, and I was like, hey, man, you want to go pop out in the alley? And he was like, nah, man, I don't think I'm going to be doing that anymore. You know, I really got to get right with my walk, you know, brother?
Oof.
And I was just like, all right, cool, more blunt for me, peace. And so I outgrew those people, and I found some people just down the road at the Catholic campus, totally different school. Shout out to Bellarmine University. It's a very prestigious school in Louisville. And I found those stoners, which, like, this was stonerology on a whole different level. These were true bona fide hippies, people that were in, like, music engineering classes and would just drop Molly on a Tuesday. You know what I mean?
Yes, dude.
A different league of stoner. And I never got into any of the other things. I just hang out and take bong rips with everybody. And then one day, John Sinners came to town. Probably shouldn't use his last name. We'll bleep that.
But shout out to John.
he was in town. He had come back from like Christmas break or something, and he was just in town for a few nights, and then he had to go back to Lexington. But he got there, and there was probably 10 of us hanging out at a house, you know, just standard makeshift throw a party together last minute kind of thing.
Yeah.
And John looked at everyone, and he said, hey, this is kind of weird, but I left my checkbook. Isn't that an archaic term? I left my checkbook in Lexington. Does anyone want to buy one of these hits of acid off of me so I have some gas money?
That's amazing. I'm surprised he didn't make the acid out of his checkbook.
Here's a blotter with half my routing number on it.
Exactly.
And for some reason, I still don't understand what I was thinking at the time, because I was still very much terrified of any drugs other than, like, just weed.
Oh, man.
And for some reason, without any mode of hesitation, I was like, yeah, here's $10.
Damn, for a hit?
A hit.
He did pretty well off you.
I know.
Yeah.
And so he handed it to me. I was like, how do I take it? And he goes, just put it on your tongue and
fucking wait.
Yeah, and just wait. And
sorry, Lauren's mom.
I plopped it in, and about 30 minutes later, I was like, hey, am I supposed to swallow this? Is it still supposed to be on my tongue? And they're like, I mean, you can spit it out. You can swallow it. It's in you now, baby.
You did the right thing. You're supposed to leave it on your tongue as long as possible.
Exactly. And so I waited, and I waited, and I waited, and about 45 minutes later, I started. You know, you get those weird, like, flu-y symptoms as that shit starts to drip down your spine? Sorry, Mom.
It's a weird anxiety almost.
Yeah. It's almost like you're drunk for the first time, and you're scared the cops are coming.
Yeah.
It's that cold sweat. And so I felt that start to come on. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I should probably find out how long this is going to last. And I said, hey, how long is this going to last?
I said, half a day.
Yeah, they were like, you're probably going to trip between 8 and 12 hours. And I was like, I have to be at work in 6. They were like, yeah, have fun, buddy. You might want to start thinking about calling off before this hits you full blast.
Amen.
And then I forgot.
So you were just a no-call, no-show that day?
Oh, no, I went in.
Dude! What?
Yeah, I went in. Dude. I tripped all night. Everyone passed out at like 3. John, who had a much higher LSD tolerance than I did, he fell asleep, and I'm just laying there like, I don't know what to do. The walls are still crawling. And then I just laid there and watched everything happen, and then my alarm went off, and I was like, well, I guess it's time to go to work. And I showed up, and I checked the time, and I was like, this isn't stopping. This hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
I only had to do a 4.5-hour shift, and it was in a cafeteria kitchen. at a Baptist hospital.
Okay.
Nothing too crazy.
It's doable. Did you check your pupils before you left the house?
No, I didn't know to. Mm. But I got there, and everyone was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "I'm on some new medication." And the way that that place worked is you would all meet up together, and then the supervisors would give you various cleaning duties. And then once the dinner rush or once the breakfast trays came back from the rooms, you were in charge of like sweeping out all the old food and running them through the dishwasher as a team. That was the whole shift. They told me to mop the floors. And I mopped about a 3.5-foot square of the floor for 2 hours.
That's what I'm talking about.
That bubbles were so pretty.
I was going to say, square was immaculate though, right?
It was so clean. Yeah. And it just stood out because the rest of the place was wrecked.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. And then I finally started to come down and I finished out the shift and went home and took a nap. But yeah, that was some point during that night. I was outside with my buddy Byron, shout out, and I was looking up at the moon, and it was full, or at least it was then. And I just remember thinking, that can't possibly have come from someone else's idea.
Yeah.
So therefore, if that is just a ball of rock that happens to be floating around, you know, gravitationally, there can't be a God. The logic didn't really make sense. But when I woke up from my nap later,
follows now.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I couldn't shake it, and suddenly, like, I lost all faith in my classes, and I quit going. And long story short, they kicked me out.
Man,
because that's what happens when you don't go to class in Bible college.
That's what they'll do.
If you don't want to be here, you don't have to. And I was 19, and I was like, oh, really?
This is cool. All right.
I guess I'm gonna go do all the drugs, and I did for a while.
Hey, all right.
At one point, I was selling mushrooms to high school kids.
Wow.
Because I didn't know any better, and neither did they.
That's you. You knew better than them. Hey.
Yeah, I knew I shouldn't have been like selling drugs to 16-year-olds.
Yeah,
but
that's amazing.
I needed the money, or at least I needed to sell enough mushrooms to be able to eat more mushrooms.
And they needed to get high. Come on, it was
so messed up. I only had one client. But that one guy was apparently feeding his entire homeroom class.
There you go.
So I would he would call me up and be like, "Hey man, I need another one." And another one meant an ounce of mushrooms. I'd be like, "Okay, all right, you guys like to party. I'll call my assistant manager at the pizzeria that I work at."
Amazing. First time I took acid, I think I was at my house in Clifton. I just went outside on the porch and there was like trees next to the house. And I just started screaming happily at the trees.
Yeah.
I was so stoked on them. I was like, I fucking get it. Like, I was really excited about these trees. Sorry, Lauren's mom. Like, I was like, you guys make oxygen? And I'm stoked about it. I was like,
you guys are making the shit I need. Sorry,
yeah,
mom.
I was having a great time just hanging out watching trees sway in the wind. That lasted for about 3 hours. And then I sat in the dark and listened to Dark Side of the Moon. And,
nice.
Yeah, that was
classic.
That was transcendent. That's something else.
Have you ever experimented with microdosing?
No, and I know Sir Albert Hofmann, the chemist that originally synthesized the stuff, did that every week of his life until he died at the ripe old age of 102.
I didn't know those facts.
Yeah, so it seems, you know, like, doesn't seem too bad. Like, I've heard of people using it just like coffee, just doing like a really small dose,
yeah,
like for the wake up in the morning.
I've heard people using it as a substitute for coffee. I've heard people using it as a substitute for their ADHD medication.
Wow.
And I've also heard people. And I mean, there's different. Like microdosing LSD is very different than microdosing psilocybin.
Yeah.
Like. And it's interesting because I've heard the people that are substituting their ADHD medication typically are microdosing LSD versus the people that are that maybe don't want to be on benzodiazepines for their depression.
Yeah.
They microdose psilocybin.
Okay. I didn't know that at all. That's dope.
Yeah. So like, and I'm so excited. This is one of the things that I think I talked about in like the earlier episodes, but like John Hopkins, it's been the forerunner for like psychedelic research ever since 2008, and they recently opened up a new center that is going to be completely devoted to psychedelic research.
Right on.
And finding out just exactly if there is any sort of medicinal benefit that can be calculated from these things, whether it's in high doses, whether it's in low doses. One of the first studies that they did was the effects of psilocybin on PTSD and major depression disorder.
I have heard about that study.
Yeah, and that's just, here's all the psilocybin your body can take, and here's a babysitter and like a face mask.
Yeah.
And when they wake up, like, suddenly, like, it's crazy, the weird side effects that happen. Like, people that were going in to try and cure their depression, not only cured their depression, but also their addiction to cigarettes and things.
Yeah.
Like, and that is what fascinates me, that you can rewire your brain to completely void yourself of the addictive chemicals that always make you go back to the same behaviors.
Psychedelics are weird, man. That's why people can't do them all the time. That's why you don't really get addicted to them, is because, like, you don't want that all the time.
No.
It's that's why people quit that shit, is because part of the experience can be brutal.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lauren's mom. Like, it really shows you yourself.
Like, oh, for sure.
Like, yeah.
For sure.
And that can suck. But
do you have any experiences while on psychedelics where, like, what's your relationship with psychedelics and mirrors? Because this is something I find fascinating.
Yeah, so, like, a lot of people get bent out of shape about that, right? They're like, don't look in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah, don't do it.
And I've had a great time with the mirror.
You obviously have a very strong sense of self. That's at least that's what I've been taking away, because
I hope so.
Definitely don't have a strong sense of self, and mirrors have always terrified me on psychedelics.
Really?
Yeah. Versus you and, like, another friend of mine, Josh, he specifically will seek out a mirror.
I kind of will,
right,
too.
Right when it peaks. Like, the first 30 minutes of his trip is him in a mirror with himself.
Yeah. And I've been there.
And he's described it to me as, like, you know, I've heard all kinds of horror stories about people that look into mirrors and have a bad time, or even try and hurt themselves and things.
Wow, that would be terrifying.
You've never heard those stories?
I mean, yeah, I've heard that. I thought they were propaganda. Crap. All right.
No. One actual.
This stuff can be bad?
Yeah. Anything can be bad. Oh, Eat a pound of chocolate and tell me how you feel.
Oh, man. Can we?
I got a candy bowl here somewhere. Let's do it.
Cool.
But the one actual account that I've been able to find that was real was, there was an instance of, I think this happened in the 90s, there was a lady in college that took a double dose of LSD and got trapped in the mirror. And from their friend's account, all that happened is she went in to use the bathroom, and she was in there for like an hour. And then when they realized that she had been in there too long, they suddenly heard a scream. And they went in to check on her, and she had grabbed a toothbrush and inserted it into her eye.
Ah.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Right. And she has no memory of, like, what caused that and what triggered her to do that to herself. Literally, the only facts that we have is that she was on LSD, she was stuck in the mirror, and then she tried to kill herself with a toothbrush.
That's a, yeah. I mean, obviously, I was being sarcastic earlier, but yeah, psychedelics are not for everybody.
No.
No,
they are not.
I've definitely heard about underlying mental disorders coming to the surface on that, like
if you have
schizophrenia,
a border,
getting amplified.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's essentially what LSD is doing to you. It is putting you in a state of schizophrenia.
Kind of. Yeah.
And then the other one that I've heard for psilocybin is actually from the Netherlands, which you can get psilocybin mushrooms over there. Well, not anymore. Now they're truffles, because they changed the law because this happened. They had a tourist come in, took a whole bunch of psilocybin mushrooms, and then stole someone's dog, broke into someone else's truck, and started skinning the dog.
Holy Christ.
Yes. And so the Netherlands changed their laws and outlawed psilocybin mushrooms. And then the psilocybin community and the psilocybin people were like, okay, well, there's no law against truffles. Totally different thing.
Brilliant. That's just like when they did the coffee shops in the Netherlands. Like,
yeah.
It's a coffee shop. We can smoke weed in here for some reason.
Right? It's totally fine. Just don't take it out on the street.
Oh, man. Psilocybin truffles. That's a... God, what a horror story. What bothers me about... How pissed would you be if you owned the truck? Like, if you...
It's covered in somebody's dog's blood.
I'm like, you've already stolen the dog and are going to do this horribly evil thing. Why do you have to involve my truck? Like, go fucking skin it in a field, you bastard.
Right? Or a bathtub. Easy cleanup.
Honestly,
something.
Honestly, this guy is a terrible dog skinner. I have a...
Oh, my God. What if that was the reaction? He's not mad that there's blood all over his truck. He's
You've
just
done
mad.
A terrible job of this.
I can't even use this as a pelt now. What is wrong with you?
He wanted the skin.
I love it. Oh, that's
heinous. Did that guy
wrong.
At least leave some of the skin? No? All right.
Oh, that's man.
Dark. All right.
So let's keep talking about drugs. This is fun.
I'm having a fun time.
Have you ever done Molly?
Yes. I did it before I was legally unable to, thanks to probation. It was a great time. I had a orgy in a hotel room.
Jesus Christ.
On New Year's. Yeah, it was really cool.
How old were you?
This old.
You were this old?
Yeah.
So this is a recent story.
Yeah, this is very recent. This might have been this New Year's, but all
right. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
The only time that I've done Molly, it was a gift, and I didn't know I was getting it.
That's what happened the first time I did it. I've done it twice. This was the second time.
First
time I did it, I was at a 4th of July party, and my friend Casey handed me a bottle, and I thought, all right, more alcohol.
Right.
I sip it, and it was like just Gatorade, and I was like, what the hell was that? And she's like, Molly water. I was like, okay, we're off. Like,
all right, yeah. See, it was my 21st birthday, and shout out to John, whatever his last name is, same guy. He comes up to me, and he was like, it's your birthday? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, how old are you? And I was like, I'm 21. And he goes, well, I have a gift for you if you want it. And I was like, of course, because you're the guy that always gives me drugs. Like, of course I want whatever you have. And then he just dumped some powder into my beer, and I was like, okay, cool. I assumed that it was just a different form of LSD. And then, I don't know, like 20, 30 minutes later, I was just like, why is everything so awesome?
Yeah.
Now? Everything is amazing. How on earth is everything so good?
Yeah.
That wasn't even the highlight of the evening. Because, I don't know, maybe 3-4 hours after that, most of the people had left, and it was just me and John and another guy who we called Duckman. Him and I share a birthday, so we were both celebrating together.
Right on.
And once everyone left, that's when John brought out the real candy. There was only three of us, and he goes, all right, guys, I know this looks like a crack pipe, but it's not. Just trust me.
This is all right. Wow. All right.
And he hands the pipe to Duckman, and Duckman goes, oh, I know what's happening. And I see Duckman take a giant hit off what looked like a crack pipe.
Yeah.
And he holds it in, and he holds it in, and he holds it in. And then John repacks it, and I'm like, that – What is that weird yellow crumbly stuff? What is that? And John hands it to me, and he goes, I'm only giving you this because I know you can handle it. Hold it in as long as you possibly can. And that was the first time I did DMT.
Oh, shit, dude.
Yeah, dog.
I haven't done that one.
It's by far my favorite thing in the entire world. Like, as far as a substance that changes you, it is, there's a reason that people call it the God particle.
Yeah, man. Shit, dude. My friend had it and offered it to me the other day, and I was having, like, a lousy day, and I figured I'll have a terrible trip.
That's not how DMT works at all.
Really?
It is not how DMT works at all.
I was like, I'm sad inside and it's going to come out. That's happened on other psychedelics to me before.
Okay, so to give you some reference for the first time that I did DMT and just how that went, I had just gone through a breakup, but I was on Molly. I took it, I exhaled, and as soon as I realized that I was tripping, I spiraled into a bad trip on DMT. A bad trip on DMT is not like a bad trip on mushrooms or LSD. It is a totally different thing. Because what happens is you are mildly uncomfortable, but DMT gives you a sense of mindfulness that you are able to clock that you're not happy or that you're upset about something, but it doesn't spiral you into a depression. It also doesn't like affect your brain waves the way that LSD does. Like LSD will make you dumb. One time when I was on LSD, I looked at my friend and I said, Byron, have I ever done acid before? I'd done it like 9 times, and I just completely forgot that I'd ever done it before, and I started panicking because I was like, I'm in Bible college. What am I doing?
Yeah.
Not on DMT. So I go through the bad trip, and what DMT does to your brain chemically, as you come out of it, it dumps your serotonin. So no matter what happens during those 5 or 10 minutes or the eternity that you're feeling like it is, as you're coming out of it, it gives you just a nice pillow of euphoria to land on.
Shit.
Yeah. It's the only drug that I will say, it doesn't matter what like state of mind you are in, just go ahead and do it.
Fuck, I should have done DMT. All right.
Did you know that your brain makes DMT on its own?
I did know that. It's in almost every living thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can get it out of most plants with a common chemistry set.
Yeah, absolutely. The fun thing about like the human brain and its relationship to DMT, I've heard it referred to as dream juice.
Yeah, apparently your body releases a shitload of it when you're born and when you die, and that's why your life flashes before your eyes.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And people, it cracks me up because there's a lot of books out there that talk about crossing over to the other side and then coming back.
Yeah.
And I fully believe that all they're experiencing is a DMT trip. They talk about it. It's the exact same archetypes. And that's the other fun thing about DMT. It's not like other hallucinogenics. The trips have patterns. They have themes. And the themes are all pretty much the same. You can, as long as like a DMT breakthrough always breaks down to the same things. You feel that you are in the presence of an intelligence, and you feel like that intelligence is trying to communicate something to you. It's always the same. Whether it's the tree of life, whether it's entities of light, no matter what, it is always the same theme of you are contacting an intelligence through a medium that your brain isn't ordinarily able to move through.
Somewhere Joe Rogan is about to come.
Oh, so hard. He's about to come.
Dude, man. God, all right. All right. Yeah, I'll do that one. Fuck.
I mean,
I was going to anyway. didn't that night, though, and it's a bummer.
Yeah, man. The next time that I did DMT, I had to be at work within like an hour, and I had the best day at work ever.
You felt like fine after? That's awesome.
Yeah, I tripped. I came down, and I still had 20 minutes to just like sort of catalog the trip and think on it before I had to leave for work.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's a crazy thing. I've never had a full-blown breakthrough, though. Like, my buddy John describes DMT as various levels, and he calls them the worlds of DMT.
Yeah.
The first world being bubble world, and that is just very slight distortions in reality. You know, like you get the geometric shapes on everything.
Yeah.
You get the flexing of the actual lines of the physical space around you.
Yeah.
The next world is creature world. And he says, this is when people start to show you their spirit animal. And I'm like, okay, John. He's like, no, you can absolutely see it every time. And I've made it to creature world where my friends are becoming like ducks and things. But then the last world he describes as God world. And he says, every time that I've had a full-blown DMT breakthrough, I have a clear vision of seraphim.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's wild.
And I'm like, so is that related at all to like the beings of light and the tree of life and stuff? And he goes, yeah, absolutely, 100%. But to me, they manifest as the seven winged angels.
Fuck.
And he came from a very, very Catholic background as well.
Oh,
so.
I know. Yeah, that's. I was going to say we should probably clarify what seraphim are for.
Yeah. There's seven winged angels. if you don't know what seraphim is, just message my mom on Facebook. She'll tell you all about them.
Sorry, Lauren's mom.
Oh man. You know, usually whenever I have a person on the podcast, right around the 25-minute mark, I start to panic because I think we're going to run out of things to talk about.
Nice.
How long do you think we've been recording?
You're bringing this up, so I feel like we're past 25 minutes.
Oh, look at you using logic.
I could. Sorry, Mom. I can use a little bit of it. I'll give us a 30, 35.
That's pretty close. We're rounding up on 45 minutes here.
Nice. Yeah, it's been fine.
Yeah.
I felt no lulls in conversation. This has been a fine discussion on drugs.
I've had a lot of people tell me that I'm good at this, and I don't know what that means.
You have a great radio voice. That's the first part of it.
Yeah, but like I don't have any control over that. I was born this way.
Fine, dude. Zion Williamson has no control over the fact that he's a human monster, but hey, he's got it. Now no one is going to get in the way when he goes to dunk.
Truth. Yeah. Truth. Oh, man. I don't take compliments well anyway. So anytime,
are you Irish?
Probably.
Okay, yeah.
I think my lineage is like half Irish and German with like a little bit of Cherokee Indian sprinkled in on top.
That last bit feels great, right?
It's so good. I tan like a mother bitch in the summer.
Damn.
Sorry,
dude,
Mom.
I don't tan the slightest. I just get really, really red, and then after all the shedding, it's like a slightly better shade of white. That's...
You got some hard Irish blood.
Yeah, dude, it's awful. It's really, really terrible. Like, if I have kids, it needs to be with a non-white person. I can't.
You can't pass that down.
I can't
to
curse the next generation.
Yeah,
no, I need my kid to have better rhythm and a better dick.
Are you sad about your dick?
No, my dick's pretty cool.
All right, sorry, Mom.
She's. It's like you're apologizing. It was cool. Sorry, Mom. I hoped you would have had a lame dick.
I know that would be preferable to you.
Oh, man. I'm going to have so many great clips out of this.
Good shit.
Do you listen to a lot of local podcasts?
I've been coming up on them a little bit. I checked out Rumble Lips or whatever, Rans, Puzzle Buddies, just because Andrew's voice is fun.
Andrew's voice is fun.
Me and Josh, Big Raspberry, were talking about, like, we've like written jokes in his voice, and it's like a cheat code. Like, it's the craziest thing.
I love
thing.
That.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that's hilarious automatically. Like, it's so cool.
Okay, it's interesting that you brought up the idea of writing jokes in his voice. You're on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
When you read local comedians' tweets, do you read them in their voice?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I don't know. Sometimes I see something so relatable I have to read it in my voice, but otherwise, yeah, for the most part.
See, I didn't start doing that until recently.
Okay.
Like, everything that I read in my own voice.
Yeah.
Up until recently, like, a couple of the comics that I'm really familiar with, I've started to just, like, their rhythm, their flow, their delivery is so, it's not that it's so unique, it's just that I'm so familiar with it.
Yeah, that's when you know the guy, when you start to read his stuff in their cadence.
Yeah,
You can see them delivering that sentence almost.
Exactly,
I know what you're talking about.
Like, you just shut your eyes and be like, this could be a YouTube clip. Like,
yeah. I'm torn about that. I know I need to be more active on Twitter. There will be times when I get absolutely manic and, like, tweet 30 times in a day.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Yeah.
But I don't know. I got to get better. But part of me is like, who's even looking at my Twitter? So it doesn't matter. I'm like, oh, I want to save those jokes for the stage. Like, that's my stupid little idea the whole time.
That's a huge mistake. That's a huge mistake.
Really?
Never confuse putting something on Twitter and then thinking that it's suddenly off limits for the stage.
Okay.
You know Blake Hammond, right?
Of course. Yeah, he does work out a lot of his shit on Twitter, doesn't he?
He absolutely does. I've seen him do entire sets where I'm like, this is your Twitter feed on Thursday.
So I'm terrified of that. I want it to be new. I want it to be like, this is something I've never heard Connor say before.
You're making another mistake where you're confusing the people that are following on Twitter, which is mostly just going to be other local comedians.
It is. And
the
friends.
People that are in the audience.
Yeah.
You got to separate trying to impress comedians versus trying to make an audience laugh, because those are two very different things.
They are, but I've found when I do the former, the latter happens easily.
Yeah.
Like, if I can get these comics to laugh, regular folks are going to be into this shit. Like, that's...
Sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Comics are dark people.
That's true. And a lot of times it's me in the back laughing at you bombing. So that maybe...
Exactly. So maybe exactly.
So maybe this isn't going... Yeah, it's a good point. That's fair. All right.
But I mean, I could. I say all of that with a grain of salt because I have no right or reason to be telling anyone what they should or shouldn't be doing. I'm an open micer too, baby.
Of
like,
course, I mean, there's like minor advice stuff, like, hey, like, move the mic stand when you start off, like stuff you tell new people.
Right.
But I always loved what Doug Stanhope said. When you tell other people how to do comedy, you're really just telling them how to do comedy like you.
Yeah, and, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Hell yeah, dude. Well, we're wrapping up to the end of it here, baby. You got any shows coming up that you want to plug? This will probably come out this Friday.
I'll be on a V.A. Bennett's show on March 12th. It's at Village Tavern or whatever. Never done that one before. Looking forward to it.
Dude, that's an amazing show.
Really?
Seriously. It's one of my favorite shows I've ever done.
Excellent. I'm looking forward. I've heard good things about that room, so I'm stoked about it.
Yeah, VA does a very, very good job, and he's got a lot of friends. He also works the bar there, so like he's got a lot of pull to actually get people in the room.
That's nice.
Yeah, and the other nice thing is like the way that bar is set up, as opposed to having all the comics in the back, the comics are kind of sequestered behind the bar in a green room area, so that the laughs from the room, you're really able to gauge what you're getting.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is nice. All right, shit.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. What are you doing soon?
Oh, that's right. I got February 18th, baby. I'm going to be at Toxic Brewing. It's a wonderful show ran by Dan Seabree. Super excited. There's some other very funny people on there. Zach Wyckoff's going to be there. I've talked about him on the podcast before. And then February 29th, I'm going to be at the St. Bernard Eagles Lodge. There's that show I'm really excited about.
Hell yeah, that's a cool place.
David Brewerman's the one that has booked it, and everyone on that show is they're absolutely fantastic, dude.
Don't you love being a part of one of those?
Like, I know, it's so nice.
Yeah,
it's so nice to get to do cool things. Oh man, I don't think that's that's it. Yeah, I got a couple shows coming up at the end of the month. Real quick. Go to the Teespree. I fixed it. The shirts don't look like garbage anymore.
Get those damn shirts. Sorry, Lauren's mom.
Use the promo code SORRYMOM1, the number one, and you'll get 10% off through the month of March. Thank you guys so much for listening. Connor, thank you for being here, man.
Thank you, Lauren. It was a blast.
Hey, take it easy, y'all.